are the Lorehounds, and welcome to the seventh circle of hell. I'm John. You can call me Dr. J.
You got to respect your side hustle, man.
That's right. That's right.
You're I'm an influencer.
Yeah.
But you don't have the double T app anymore to hustle on.
That's right.
Is YouTube Shorts living up to the promise?
I have decreased my screen time.
More healthy. That's healthy.
Yeah, exactly. You. Exactly. So I guess it's living up to some promise.
That's good. That's good. Well, John, despite what you might think of our relationship, I'm here to tell you that alcohol and tobacco are actually my two closest friends. And unfortunately, you take third. So I apologize for that.
That's all right. I you know, they're a good first and second. I think many people would say the same.
Yes, especially my generation. We were drinking and smoking when we were just learning to ride our bikes. We were putting on those little playing card motor gear things.
Mm-hmm.
So that spokes. So we could then go ride very, very far away and sneak cigarettes. So true story.
You're going to sneak cigarettes and make your bike as loud as it can possibly
be. Exactly, right? You know, hey, that's 10-year-old logic, right?
That's right.
That's the way it works.
Well, we're here to talk about episode 10 of season 2 of The Pit, 4 p.m.
You can email feedback to us at ptmc@thelorehounds.com. And always there are links in the show notes for all of our affiliate podcasts, our Discord, our community Discord server, and anything else you want to know about us.
That's right. And don't forget to check out our Notion-based show guide that David's put together with the help of some of his friends. Is that a Beatles song? Who knows? We can't even have the rights to it. you can keep track of the characters. You can get a list of the patients and their conditions. And none of this is medical advice.
No medical advice. And I have to say, well, we could just sort of roll on from there. Nancy, hand of the pod, two kids, two dogs on our Discord, is crushing it. Like Park the Shark, is crushing. Well, he's not really crushing any leg injuries, but anyway, he's crushing the OR. Nancy has, like, I put the show guide together and I was goofing around. I was doing a little vibe coding, seeing if I could, you know, like somehow automatically update the patient records week to week or some stuff like that. And then Nancy got in and got all caught up on season two. And then she's just been in there, just jamming it full of information. We've reorganized it. We've made it look better. And it's a really great reference. I kind of keep it on my phone when I'm watching the episode, because that way I can scroll through really quick and see a face and catch a name or remember a patient and a diagnosis. So again, it's better as a phone app than it is a computer app. I mean, it works fine on the computer, but like using it by phone during the episode, it's a great use case for it. So
it's great whatever you use it on.
It is great whatever you use it on.
Everybody,
so check it out. There's a link in the show notes. So,
David, you did a mid-season check-in with Ian and Jean.
John, not Jean.
Oh, I thought this was Jean the whole time. I thought you just made a typo in the outline.
No. Jean, I don't know if Jean is in on this show. He's too busy watching Paradise right now.
I've been duped. I've been falsely advertising this podcast on other podcasts.
John and Jean. And he's all in over on the Paradise side of things. So I think we're going to have some more conversations with him.
This is John from Dune Minute?
Dune Minute Podcast.
Oh, I've now understood what's happening. I don't even know what's going on my own podcast.
And Ian from the Captain's Pod. So like, what are Dune and Star Trek have to do with the Pit? Well,
you'll have to find out by
you'll have to
in.
Check in and find out. So, and hopefully I'll catch up with those guys at the end of the season as well.
Mm-hmm. And you've got another guest coming, I hear.
Sarah, our chief medical correspondent, has agreed to come on the pod.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Sarah, for being willing. And looking forward to hearing that if I can't be on it.
Yeah, so she's got some vacay time coming up, I think, in about a week or so. And so we agreed that we'll like zero in on a time once we get into that week where she'll be just around and not working a night shift or a day shift or a double.
Right, right.
Saving people's lives and that kind of stuff. Because she works in the, I believe she works in an emergency department. So, but we will find out.
Taking time out for the vital work we do here at the Lore House.
That's right. Exactly.
Saving lives one ear hole at a time.
And we also have a new entry from Shane for the Baby Jane Doe contest.
Let's hear it.
Baby Jane Doe.
Baby oh, it's Jane cut off.
Oh, it's looping.
Baby Jane Doe.
I think I put three in there. To be able to get it here. But I didn't realize it cut off. Like, I wasn't trying to analyze it when he sent it in. I just looped it.
Well, Shane, I think, it anyway. It almost works better. It's like a TikTok, right? It's like a short form video. It's cutting off. But it should have just been like Baby Jane Doe, Baby Jane Doe. But you know, no gap at all.
Right. No gap at all.
But I'm loving it.
I'm not hip like these young kids.
Well,
and you know what he did? He recorded that on, I think, on our Discord, and he just, you know, didn't even, I don't know if he sent it on his phone, but I got it off the Discord. And like, yeah, people, you can just record your Baby Jane Does on the Discord, and then we can include them on the podcast.
Well, have fun with it, everybody. Get your Baby Jane, Baby's Jane Doe. Is it like Attorney's General?
Baby's Jane Doe.
Exactly. Baby's Jane Doe. Yeah.
I like it. Yes, that's perfect. Well, get him in before Peds shows up, so.
That's right. Yeah. We're running out of time.
We are.
All right. Well, what'd you think of the episode, David?
I think that this might have been my favorite episode of the season so far. It's kind of hard to tell. I guess, you know, part of my season assessment overall, we're about, what, two-thirds of the way through the season? And I can't develop a full theory of the season. You know, there's I've been doing a bunch of reading in the space around what's called reader response theory. It comes out of literary criticism, but it can be applied to television. And there's this whole thing around called gap filling and the wandering viewpoint. And that's where we do this all the time in the Lorehounds community. And I'm sure in other TV reaction and analysis podcasts and stuff is where we look for the clues that are going to tell us the trajectory of the story and the characters. And we try to develop patterns and understandings of what's going on. And we bring our own context, but we also listen to what the show is telling us. And I don't yet have like a total view of the season. I'm like really lost in the stream, sort of being carried down river. I don't feel like I'm under my own control in mapping out what this season is doing.
Let's get a film geek in here to pull out Save the Cat and figure out what's going on.
Save the Cat?
You're not aware of Save the Cat?
I am not.
It's all right. So it's a real thing that has been now like made annoying by like snobs in like film and media.
I see some.
It's like an outline of a film arc, right?
Got it.
And it's named after the first action that makes you want to sympathize with the protagonist, which is they have to do something like save a cat out of a tree.
Got it. Opening, yeah, catalyst, break into act two, midpoint. What was your favorite? One of your favorite writers has a
Vonnegut, The Shapes of Stories.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is a very standardized Shapes of Stories.
Yes.
This is like you're just starting on. It was made by somebody who was like, hey, here's how you get started on a screenplay, or here. Gotcha. It's been applied to like novels and things like that. But of course, now people have run with it, and then everybody's like, have you heard of Save the Cat? And like it's become like a thing.
It's interesting. I've never heard of it. But on Second Breakfast, I'm going to talk about this book that I got about how to teach. It's like a guide for teachers to teach reader response theory, and I'm like geeking out hardcore on it.
You got to give me the title because I got to read it now.
Yeah, I got it on the Thrift Books, but I'll talk about it on the Second Breakfast.
There you go.
This weekend.
There you go.
Anyway, I'm saying all this because this season is so rich and so complex and sort of layered, and I trust the writers to take me where they want to take me, but I don't know where they're taking me, right? Like, I don't understand what the trajectory is of Joy Kwon or what's Ogilvy's first name? I should look it up.
I don't know. I didn't know Joy's last name, and I don't know Ogilvy's first name. Right. And I used the show guide for Joy. I didn't think to do Ogilvy.
There you go. James Ogilvy.
James Ogilvy. Right. He, you know, I want to call him Jimbo. He's kind of an asshole, so I think he should be Jimbo.
So, you know, their facial acting this episode was hilarious. The you know, we're seeing different sides. Like Santos is like really up everybody's nose this episode. I mean, I fist pumped it a couple of times, you know, when Al-Hashimi drops the mic as she steps out of the, you know, trauma room, or when, you know, Becca's like, oh yeah, I'm having lots of sex. I'm like, yeah, Becca, you know, I'm
oh like, my God,
this is awesome.
That was so funny. And because I'm just saying, like, Mel's having the worst fucking day of her life.
She's totally having the worst day.
Nobody needs to hear that from their sister.
And nor their, you know, the person that they're the caregiver of.
Right.
Right.
And right after, like the lawyer, like, what amazing storytelling, by the way, the lawyer, like, we don't see any of the deposition. We just see the lawyer going to her.
Perfect.
I've never seen anyone go that hard on a deposition. And Mel's just standing there like deer in headlights, traumatized. So good.
And I you know, something else that makes me think of, we don't see other parts of the hospital yet. We've seen the helipad, chairs, the outside of the hospital, and the emergency department. We don't really see anything else. So that I really like
that. We had a room on the third floor where our good friend Whitaker was living for a minute. But
that's right. In the abandoned part of the hospital. Right, they don't have enough bed space, but yet they have a whole abandoned wing.
Well, yeah, that's what Gloria said, right? Oh, we have the beds. We don't have the nurses.
That's true. That's true. Because we want to just use AI to replace labor. Anyway.
Right.
We can move on from there. Anyway, I guess my point is I'm enjoying the shit out of this season.
Me too. Yeah. I think it's great. I'm really there. I'm enjoying too this twist of the water park. Like, I didn't think it was going to be that, I hate to be that kind of viewer, but I was like, not enough death, but not enough violence. Like, there's only two cases here. There's only two cases for them to work on, but like, they're good cases. I'm actually really glad that it's not like, you know, everybody all over the place. It's just like, oh shit, these like crazy cases. And it gives us time to have those small moments with Roxy and her son.
Right.
And Dr. J having her breakdown.
Right.
You know, and Mohan having a panic attack and her boss being very toxic about it.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about all of that.
Right. And you couldn't do that if we were in the middle of Pit Fest.
Right? No. Yeah. And that was, which was just a rolling factory of.
That was like two stuff. Episodes straight of just action.
Right. Right. Just medical drama where, yeah, in a water park, it makes sense. You're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have hundreds of casualties. You're going to have a few.
Right. You have a bored guy at the top telling people, next, wait, next. Wait.
I haven't been to a water park since I think I was in.
And nor will you now.
Or high school. Yeah, no, I don't think so. Otherwise, I'd just end up doing a Homer and they'd have to, you know, take a section out by crane. I'm not really that large.
I went in college, I remember, and it was fine. But like, it just doesn't appeal that much to me. Did enjoy the water park episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
What about you? What else? What other thoughts you got?
I thought it was great. I don't know if I'd call it my favorite ep, but I'm not calling it my favorite ep.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that the little moments shone for me more than others. It had enough juice in like, oh my God, she's like, you cut off my leg. Like all these like,
oh my God,
you know, misunderstanding problems.
Yeah.
A lot of comedy of errors in this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You have, what's his name? The main guy, Robbie. Robbie being like, oh my God, Mohan's having a heart attack. And he's like, is this a f-ing panic attack? Right. You have all these baits and switches. I'm really struggling with plurals tonight. We don't usually record this late anymore.
Yeah.
But a lot of comedy of errors kind of thing.
When Robbie's playing with the scope and he's like flicking it around in front of Duke's face, like, doo, 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 like, I'm going to stick this in your nose. It's like, oh my God. So yeah, I love, we talk about this a lot, the use of comedy to leaven heavy, you know, or serious topics. And I think the show has found that right balance.
Oh, by the way, Duke has lung cancer, right? Not a doubt about
it. Gotta be, right?
That or emphysema or something like that. Like it's got to be something like catastrophic.
Right. That's Whitaker called it on the trip. Thing. Yeah. Right. So.
Right.
He said, yeah, he's got, this other thing can be going on. So.
Right. I do not think that this guy is healthy at all.
Not at all.
It's just a cough.
So should we read the feedback email that we got from Sarah, our chief medical correspondent?
Absolutely.
She says, David and John, I'll try to keep this one shorter and less squeam-inducing. Squeam-duction? How would you create a German word that...
Squeam-ingostion.
Squeam-ingostion. Take 18 syllables to convey a simple thought. Scrubs. Yeah, so we were talking about scrubs last episode, your uniform. Yes, scrubs. Yes, that scrubs vending machine is real, !! It's mostly used by the OR staff because they have to have OR scrubs on to walk into the OR. Most places will give you credits for 2 to 3 pairs of scrubs, so you don't have to put a gown on to get new scrubs like Whitaker did. You do have to return scrubs to get the new ones once you run out of credits, and it's totally a penny-pinching move because people would just walk away with scrubs and never return them. Okay, that I can get. That kind of makes sense. You do sometimes get served up the wrong size or a pair of pants that are super short for some reason. Styles and fabrics have definitely changed. Scrubs used to be all unisex, boxy, and stiff cotton, and a lot of pattern tops and jackets were popular. Now the fabrics are mostly synthetic, stretchy, and more akin to workout fabrics that wick moisture. Scrubs are much more form-fitted, tailored, and solid colors are preferred over patterns these days. So that's interesting. That kind of makes sense to use the athleisure wear technology for...
Yeah. You're stuff. Running around all day, right? There's a lot of physical activity. I do enjoy the Chuck E. Cheese aspect of the machine. You get a couple tokens. See what's going on.
Do you have to hit a target with your old scrubs to be able to register them that and then they drop in or something?
I don't know. I think it's more of the water machine, right? You have to squirt the water at the guy, knock him over.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, who is this dude? My daughter's friend introduced them to, I think he's on Netflix. He's like a NASA scientist. He's one of these shouty science guys. These like hyper bros that, all have YouTube channels. Well, this guy, like, apparently he's like some sort of NASA scientist. What's his name? Mark or something like that. Anyway, I breezed through the living room the other day and she was watching this one about how he built all these robots that he could load into his backpack to defeat all these different arcade games. And I was like, well, okay, that seems productive.
I'm surprised if they didn't show Langdon's new, his guard that they had to put on when he came back.
His what?
Well, I just told you it's the water machine. You have to shoot at the target. His is a urinalysis to make sure.
Oh, that he's not using. John. I'm sorry, everybody. Do you want to finish up Sarah's email?
Okay. Quick note on the PCOS patient. Not only did she have PCOS, but she also had an ovarian torsion where the ovary twists and cuts off blood flow. Symptoms of this are mimicked by the PCOS, hence it would be easy to miss and easy to dismiss. This is a surgical emergency because loss of blood flow could lead to death of the ovary, usually fixed laparoscopically, hopefully in time to save the ovary. P.S. Testicles also get twisted. Also a surgical emergency. Sorry, had to make you a little squeamish. Still loving this show and listening to your takes on it, Chief Medical Correspondent and Squeam Inducer, Sarah. Thank you.
Didn't they do... season one had a twisted testicle.
Did it? Maybe?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it did. I'm pretty sure there was a guy who had that.
I think that may have been the case, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, good that they could fix it laparoscopically. Those at home, if you've not had to run into this, I have in my personal life with family, but they now poke a couple holes in you. They put a camera in and they do everything without making like a big incision. It's crazy.
It is a huge medical advance because if you don't have to create that huge wound that could become infected or has to be stitched up and you have to do all that wound care management and stuff, like that is a massive improvement in healthcare.
My dad had a bad heart valve. Like he was born with it. Mm-hmm. And he had to have it replaced. And then he had to have it replaced 5 years later because it went bad because it was just like a bad model. And the first one,
I don't even want to go down the joke lane on that. Just
like, it's terrible. It was a whole thing. Well, yeah. The thing was supposed to last 10 years. It lasted 5. It was a whole thing. So anyway, it was like a 6-week recovery one time and like a 2-week recovery the next time because it was laparoscopic.
Wow.
Wow. It's crazy how much better things got over like 5 years, like very amazing. Quickly.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Yeah. Things can get twisted in the body. There are medical emergencies. So, you know what? You know,
I have to honor my dad by telling you the funny thing he did. He had a cow valve put on. He had a bovine valve put on his heart. And he came out of anesthesia, and my mom asked him if he was okay, and he goes, moo.
Like, as a dad, that's the right answer.
Isn't that perfect?
That's exactly what was in my mind. If my child said them, yeah, I would totally do that.
All right. Well, yeah. Thank you, Sarah. And thank you for the vision of testicular torsion. We all needed that today.
Mm-hmm. Or ovarian torsion.
Or ovarian torsion, but I don't have ovaries, so it makes me less squeamish.
There you go.
Anyway. So,
we will talk to Sarah in the next couple of weeks. So if you get any questions for Sarah, I'd be happy to ask questions for you. You can leave them on the Discord, or you can email us at PTMC. And I think what we'll do is we won't have her on for a full episode, but we'll just have a chat. And then maybe we'll, depending on how long it is, we'll either release it independently or tack it on to a regular episode.
Sounds good.
We'll just see what happens.
Looking forward to it. All right. Shall we take a break?
Sounds like a good plan.
See you there.
There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
And we're back. All right, David, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got a very feisty Dr. Rabinovich, I'm going to call him this episode.
Yeah, I think he needs to be, his name needs to be proper. We have to switch it from, like, when I was a kid, you know, when my parents were mad at one of us, we'd get the full name treatment.
Oh, I was calling him Rabinovich.
Oh,
I was trying to call him.
You slipped that in so subtle, and it didn't even register. It was so good.
The listeners at home caught it. I believe in them.
Okay, very good. Yeah, no, he is being a little bit of a.
He's not great. He's not great this episode. I mean, him with Mohan, I think that was really like not forgivable. That was out of line.
Now remember, like, last season there was a little tension between the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, he was like, you got to move on. You got to take, you know, you got to stop taking so much time. Like, pick a lane, buddy. Is she too chill or is she too panicked?
Right.
It's not even that. It's just like he's clearly stressed out about a million other things and he's taking it out on her. And that sucks. I mean, I understand the idea of like, hey, if she's having a panic attack, you can't have her seeing patients right now because it's going to be med mal all over the place. Especially if he's aware of it, right? If he's aware that she's having a panic attack and he lets her keep working, that's going to be a huge problem.
Right. And he does call out the liability issue.
Right.
Like if you're woozy and you fall and you hit your head or whatever, or you're doing a procedure on somebody. Yeah. Like you got to be on your game.
There was a way to say that.
100%.
And that was not the way.
It was not. In front of her fellow workmates there.
Right.
Right.
And I understand the stress of like someone you've been mentoring, one of your staff is potentially having a cardiac incident. I'm sure that was so stressful and that got him to the edge after already.
He came running.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He was straight there.
Right. And he's like, no, nobody else is working on her. I'm working on her. Great. But then, you know, that reaction was way overblown. And also, like, panic attacks are real things. Like they are real physical phenomena that happen to people.
I was thinking of you when she was starting to have her panic attack. So
I was just like, why, you know, that's very outdated, right? To not treat it as a real physical ailment.
Mm-hmm.
Because they happen. They happen to a lot of people, and they are not fun.
No, and they can lead to a lot of problems, especially if you faint or something, if you experience syncope, as we've learned that fainting is called now. Syncope? Something. I had to look up the patient who had that, the football, young football player.
Well, my wife is 10 feet from me and pointed out that Robbie was having panic attacks all last season.
Right? He was completely having panic, PTSD-induced panic attacks.
Right.
So.
And who had to save him? But Wee Whitaker.
Yes.
Little Whitaker. Whittle Whitaker.
Who he calls one of their best when he's introducing him to Duke.
Rules for me, not for thee.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about, too, the fact that he drops that line walking away from Malashimi, like, oh, you know, if this place is going to fall apart, like when I'm away, he picks Ogilvy instead of Langdon, like right in front of Langdon. He's just, you know, when he wants to be, you're one of the best, like, oh, the sunshine. But then when he gives you the cold shoulder, man, it's brutal. And then we have that counterpoint of Al-Hashimi, who's a lot more even keeled and fair with people. I think maybe her line to Santos a few episodes back about, oh, I'd hate to have you have to repeat your year two. That was a little harsh. Like, I don't think that's the way you could have said that. But she's been so fair in other places.
In other places, sure. I do think that she has been especially cruel to Santos, and I don't love that.
But she's been being nicer now.
I don't know. I noticed something that really irked me this time was that she goes, Santos, take this case. Bring Dr. Langdon with you. And I don't know. That was a little bit of a dig, I thought, to be like Santos and then Dr. Langdon.
Mm-hmm.
Like automatically placing... yeah, but like, you know what? I know that Langdon has more experience than her, but it's also his first day back. And no, she doesn't have the whole story, but she does know that it's his first day back. So maybe let's not like place a ton of digs on Santos and like reinforce that power dynamic that much.
So are you doing any fill-ins on the plot? Like what's going to happen to Robbie? Is he going to get in a motorcycle accident and the helicopter is going to fly him in and it's going to be Langdon who's got to save his life or any of that kind of stuff?
I hope not. I don't want it to be that dramatic. I just want him
to be that kind of show.
I just want him to put on a fucking helmet at the end, okay? Right. That's what I want out of his character arc.
But riding 12 hours, like riding to Canada or whatever his plan was after working a 12-hour shift is definitely not a smart idea.
Yeah.
So.
No, definitely.
And that's the thing where I just don't know where any of this is going to go. And if, you know, I've been peeking at some of the Reddit threads, which, oof, man, after an episode drops, that place is on fire. That subreddit is going full tilt. And everybody's theorizing and trying to figure it all out and everything like that. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of, you know, it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to think about some of these things. But at the same time, I just want them to tell the story that they're going to tell. Like, I don't feel a huge need to theory craft for this one. Sometimes it's fun to do.
I don't want to theory craft. The only theory crafting I want to do is the betting pool, and that's over because we know what happened.
Right, exactly.
And we didn't even have inside intel from...
Right, and Princess crushed us, everybody.
Yep.
So you want to talk a little bit more about Dr. Al-Hashimi?
Yeah, I can't get a read on this woman. I just can't get a read on this doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, she is just... does she like the AI too much? Yeah. Is she really hot and cold with Santos? Also, yeah. She also had a big point with Robbie this episode, and I think when she's on, she's really on. Also, I like that she kind of clapped back a little bit at the dick surgeon.
At Garcia.
I thought his name was Richard Cranium.
Richard Cranium?
What? Yeah, dickhead. Dickhead.
Oh man, you're too subtle to me with me today. Your dad joke game is, you got two kids. I only got one. So I think you're working on a different level of dad joke.
I had sick kid all day. And I think it just spurred on to me.
Yeah. You know?
It's just really getting there. He was awful, that surgeon. And I saw...
Park the Shark? Lou Ferrigno Jr.? The orthopedic surgeon?
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody on the internet is like, oh, that's what orthopedic surgeons are like.
Yeah, I saw that. That's what I was just going to say is like the Reddit community was saying every person in a hospital, every person who works in a hospital knows a God complex surgeon. Not that all surgeons are like that. Like, I've met wonderful surgeons that are so kind. Like, the surgeon who did my mom's surgery was like one of the kindest people I've ever met. Like, he's like literally about to do a life-saving procedure on my mom, and he's like, so everything's going to be okay. We're going to go in there laparoscopically, and nothing will ever go wrong, and we're doing great, guys. You know, like, I was just like, oh my God, I felt like the calm rush over me. That was not this surgeon, right? Like, this surgeon had a God complex and was like, oh, it's your first day?
The way he was handling the leg, the shot setup on that was so good. Oh my God, so much comedy in
clean
this episode.
Cut.
Oh, Jesus, the way he's flexing the foot and everything like that. It was so good. I love that.
He just did not care. It was just a toy to him.
And then the way that Ogilvy and Whitaker are sitting there like two sort of two boys in front of, you know, two little kids in front of the principal's office or something like that.
Right.
They're in trouble.
I also just loved Ogilvy just having the leg in there. He's like, where do I put this? He's like, hold on to it for a second. Like,
I clipped a shot of that and put it in our Discord channel because it was just his face acting was too good. It's like, what? Oh my God.
Well, he thought he'd have more time today. He brought a book.
Yes. Well, we're going to talk about that book in a little bit too. So anyway, Al-Hashimi was crushing it. Back to Dr. Al-Hashimi. The slash trach thing, the improvised tracheotomy.
I had to look away, but yeah, it seemed cool from the audio.
And then when she drops the mic, when she leaves, when Garcia's like, you know, would you use like a chainsaw on this or whatever? And she's like, well, maybe they'll thank him, you know, thank me for saving his life. I was like fist pumping. I was just like, yeah.
Garcia was awful this episode.
She was and she wasn't, right? She's on her way to being like Park the Shark.
She's really, I do think that she's at least got a partial God complex going on. Yeah. I mean, she's already once said, I am the OR. So I think she might be there already, but.
Right.
And it just seems like, I don't know. The more that we get interactions with her and Santos, I feel like Santos is being taken advantage of a little bit.
I kind of feel that. Oh, and that's a question for Sarah too. Maybe what is Garcia's job? Cause she's not in the OR operating. Otherwise she wouldn't be down and back all the time. And
no,
she
I
said
think
something.
She is from the OR. She just comes down to consult a lot.
Right. And so I'm saying she's not. How many surgeries is she doing? Because you got to scrub in and scrub out and glove. So, like, I think she's like some sort of liaison.
I think so she's just one of the more junior surgeons and therefore has to do more of the running down to the ER to evaluate.
Right. The assessment and then report back to other surgeons and make sure the patients are going here or there.
Like, she does surgeries, but I think if someone has to run down to the ER, unless it's a specialist issue, it's her. Yeah. She's just kind of the liaison. I did not love any of her behavior this episode. And I still cannot let go of the fact that when Santos came to her with a legitimate concern about Langdon last season, she goes, don't tell anybody what you just told me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a good trait in doctors to feel like you're infallible or that you have to protect people just because you know them or like. Mm-hmm.
Although she is right. Garcia is right in as much as quit whining about it and get on with your job.
I understand that. I understand that part. And Santos should just confront him about it. At the same time,
he's been trying to talk to her.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah.
He's making digs at her.
No, he earlier on in the season, he was like trying to catch her eye and like get up with her. I mean, that's, you know, between Robbie and Santos, those are the two hardest conversations.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the last conversations he has this season. Mm-hmm. They're probably saving that for a later episode, and that's fine. You know, we gotta save some drama.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's just going to keep getting more tense between them until then. And that's one of the arcs of the season, if you want to speculate.
Yeah, and I think Santos is cruising to give herself a bruising if she just can't let it go. Right? He didn't get fired. He's not arrested. It's however many months ago. He's back. He's working. He's employed. He's done the stuff. He's trying to, you know, he's trying to, you know, follow his steps. Like Donna says, you know, what does she say? The success of your recovery is like the within the scope of your community and the people that are supporting you with your recovery.
Let me bring in Santos's perspective here, though, and I'm not a huge Santos defender. I just want to be clear.
People were like, mad at Santos this episode.
I have been a Santos detractor many times, but on this Langdon issue, I am largely on her side because Santos didn't just observe him stealing the drugs, but she also was retaliated against for noticing it. Right? He was yelling at her in one episode, like really berating her, letting loose on her.
Ooh, I don't remember that episode.
This was in season one.
Yeah. No, and I'm trying to remember when that happened, but I don't.
It was somewhere in the middle of season one. And then Robbie pulled him aside and was like, what the fuck was that, basically? But like, sure, he went and got his treatment. And everyone's giving him a clap on the back for getting his treatment and like, oh, good for you, brother. And let's get you back out there. But Santos never got any kind of resolution from the fact that she was subjected to a hostile work environment and subjected to verbal abuse at this guy's hands. I don't expect her to make the first move in reconciling this. I do think that the way he acted was a fireable offense. That is, I think that's without a doubt. Right? He stole drugs and
he stole drugs. There's no doubt about that part's
definitely a fireable offense. The other one probably warranted disciplinary action too, but it got swept under the rug because it was part of this bigger thing. Right? And you know, this is her second day working with this guy. The first day he berated her probably worse than anyone has in her whole life.
I have to remember. I do not remember that at all.
It was really, really bad. Like it was like shockingly bad. And then Robbie had to pull him aside and be like, don't you ever talk to a subordinate like that again.
Huh? Wow. I've really blanked that. Okay.
Anyway, so that's my Santos perspective, is I don't think that
somebody write in and remind us which episode it was. So
I don't think that anyone would feel comfortable working with Langdon after that.
Interesting.
Especially the first day back, right? And he doesn't even come up to apologize. Which I know you're saying he's trying to, but I don't know. I haven't gotten that same vibe.
Okay. He's definitely like, hey, and then, you know, she'll see him and she'll turn away, right? Or he got sent out to do triage out on the chairs. So, you know, he wasn't around in the back.
Yeah. And to be clear, like Santos did everything right, right? She reported to his superior. She told him what was going on, and really what happened was the more serious things got swept under the rug, and then Langdon got treatment, and that's great for him personally, but Santos was kind of left behind on that, right? And now she's had a few months to find herself in this job, to really, you know, start to make her mark, start to gain some experience, gain some seniority, and all of a sudden she's being forced to, quote-unquote, learn under this guy who was a real dick to her.
So in season three, I want to hear this same clear and cogent and empathetic defense of Ogilvy.
I'm not saying it won't happen, but I think it could be likely. He doesn't have a leg to stand on.
Ooh, bad one. Oh, my goodness. You're on a roll. Just real side note on Notes of a Native Son. That's the book that he hands to the English teacher patient, who is, I will tell you now, I have to go to my patients list here, to Austin Green.
He would have called that a run-on sentence, by the way.
Yes, that was delay. That was a delay tactic while I was trying to click around on my screens. That's a book by James Baldwin. It's 10 essays published in 1955. It's his debut nonfiction book, and it's all about his, it's about perspectives and experience of race and identity and the black experience in both America and in Europe, and as a gay man, an openly gay man in the, 50s and 60s. And it's, I think by a lot of standards, for autobiographical in the autobiographical category. It's like a very highly rated book in terms of its approach and its tone. Baldwin lived from 1924 to 1987. He was a writer and a civil rights activist. I think his biggest cultural splash that where maybe folks would know him was on a televised debate in 1965 with William F. Buckley. And there's a great 2016 documentary called I Am Not Your Negro, which is all about his life. And he's probably one of the most I don't know if I can say this because I don't know this aspect of the literary world well enough, but I kind of think of, in some ways, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who he is now as a thinker and a writer. I don't wonder if he follows in the same mold or footprints as James Baldwin in terms of somebody who's just really deeply, who deeply thinks about these issues and has, is just such a cogent and eloquent writer.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I haven't ever considered that comparison, but I don't know enough about James Baldwin.
Right. Interesting though, that this, young white male who has all this privilege and sort of perspective on life, whatever his perspective on life, that he's reading a Baldwin book, which is a gay black man. Right. And it's about his experience and points of view in 1955 about race and identity, both in, and because Baldwin lived in Europe for quite a long time. I believe he lived in Paris for a long time. So that's an interesting little thing that the writers are doing there.
It could be one of two things. It's either that they are trying to show that this person who's facially shows basically zero empathy for others, other than maybe with the English teacher, but you know, that's one guy.
There's
right?
he's relating to him like his dad. And so,
I don't know if I'd fully call it empathy. It's at least kindness to him. But, you know, this guy who's really shown not a lot of empathy towards like fat people, and again, using the term that the activist community wants, I'm using that deliberately. Unhoused people, elderly people, right? He's shown this kind of like, not disdain, but like, yeah, obtuseness is a good word.
Yeah.
It's either trying to show an empathetic side of him, or it's trying to show him as a guy who wants to be seen reading a book like that on his first day. Right. And I could see either one, but I think you can guess what I'm leaning towards.
I think with the Austin Green character, though, they've started to give us that extra dimensionality that they give every character. And no character is necessarily safe from having their weaknesses or flaws or, you know, things that they're working on from a character standpoint. All of that is on the table for examination in a season. And we never know where they're going to go with that. Like Javadi is having a tough time right now.
Dr. J. An influencer. can we just jump right into that? Because that was wild to me. Absolutely wild to me. The mom being like, you made a mistake. It would be better if you were a surgeon. Are we kidding?
Street level medicine, where people upstairs who are more practiced, the higher up the tower you go, the more worthy you are.
I would rather Robbie treat me than her any day. Based on that question, because that's the kind of person who does not learn from their mistakes.
Mm. That's a person who crushes anyone who would point out their mistakes.
Right, right. I just, that between her and the Dr. Park and Garcia, they are really not painting a great view of surgeons in this show so far.
No, they're not.
I don't. And the one night surgeon we had, Robbie yelled at, and now he's not going to come back. So, right. The guy, it's my first day. He's like, give me a grown up.
Well, and Dr. J's father seems kind of a sweetheart. And
was he a surgeon, or I thought he was in something else?
Yeah, maybe he's not a surgeon. And
I think
who
just
did
her
he
mother's in surgery.
Introduce us to, I don't know that that's in our show guide. Where is Dr. J? Oh, no, there it is. Michelle Campbell, attending physician, internal medicine. No, that's a different one. That's a different person. So many characters this episode, this season. Anyway, so yeah, there's a lot going on for Dr. J. Sorry, I got lost in the list of trying to find who that was. I don't know where she goes from here. Like, that wasn't like what McKay said. We're like, oh, give her a chance. She might surprise you. That was pretty rough. Chief of Dermatology, that's who it was, Amy June, Dr. Amy June. That was rough, right? This was a mommy, this was like a mommy issues episode, right?
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of that. Was there a daddy issue thing? I feel like there was a daddy issue thing at some point, too.
No, the dad was trying to find his kid because he, oh, man, that would suck.
Oh, would man, yeah, experience. I couldn't imagine that whole thing. I can't find my kid. And we know that there was at least one fatality, so that's clearly building tension for us.
Right.
I'm hoping that this is a fake out, and we're not going to know who the fatality was, but
yeah,
boy, are they really stressing us out about it.
So we had Javadi, Mohan, and Roxy, all with sort of mom-related issues.
Yeah.
Roxy, yeah. Yeah, we're definitely down the track of the death with dignity path here.
Absolutely. I mean,
I think there's a lot of comments too. People were saying, oh, how can they make space in the ER and all that kind of stuff? And I think she's in the ER until they can get a bed in the ICU.
I think that's right.
For her.
Yeah. Well, they said that explicitly.
Right.
They said that at one point. They were like, you know, it's going to be a while until we can get a bed upstairs. I don't think it's ICU. I think it's just, you know.
Or what's the admission. Other med surge or whatever?
Yeah, med surge.
Yeah. See, look, listen to us. Listen to us, like talking. Wow, like we're talking
trained
about.
Doctors now. No, we're not. No, we're not. But yeah, I mean, it's very sad. But you know, again, personal experience with this. I appreciated what McKay said to the kid. She gave him agency, but still said like, hey, you know. You shouldn't think about you now. You should think about yourself in 10 years. You're probably going to regret it if you don't talk to her.
Cancer sucks, man.
It sure does.
We've had lost a couple people in our family from that. So
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I could really empathize with Javadi, though, like being in that room and going like, oh, my God. Right. And watching this family say goodbye.
It's also like McKay can say like we need boundaries, but you know that intellectually Javadi knows that, right?
Right.
But we're all humans,
right?
We're all humans, and it affects us to be in a room with death.
And sometimes it's going to hit us in one moment, and then in a completely different patient, in a week or two, or a month or two, or whatever, it could hit you in a way that's totally unexpected.
Yeah.
So
you never know.
McKay, I have to say, is we're not getting a lot of complexity in her storyline this season, but
girl just wants a boyfriend.
She's one of my favorite doctors on the floor.
She was definitely one of my favorites. Like you said, though, it's just not a lot of her this season.
No, there's not a lot going on. So, but I hope. But we get to stick around with her some more. I really like her.
Have you seen her dad?
No.
The actor's dad?
Fiona Dourif?
Yeah.
I do not know her actor's dad. Who is he?
This is Brad Dourif. Look at him young. It's the same face.
Brad Dourif. Oh, that guy.
Worm Tongue from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yeah.
But isn't that funny? They have like the same face.
That's hilarious.
Crazy.
Yeah. He did a lot of Chucky. A lot of Chucky movies.
He knows what he's doing. But
crazy.
It definitely, cash grab. Definitely his child.
For sure. Yeah. And he was also in Dune. He was, Piter, one of the Harkonnen Mentats.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very cool. Nice. I had no idea. I had no idea that was her dad. Anyway.
Yeah.
I like her a lot. So what else we got?
Becca, we talked about, you know, yes. She's waiving her confidentiality, apparently.
Yeah, it's fine.
In a lot of ways, she's waiving her confidentiality.
Stop, man. very literal use of words, right? That's a definitely a thing. Like, don't say a couple of minutes if you don't mean it. Like, these are all things that you have. Like, if you don't know, that's just what you're going to say. And then that actually has an effect. So it's interesting.
I mean, I will say, my mom was one of the people who she would say, I'll be home in 5 minutes. I'm around the corner. Mm-hmm. And she meant that she'll be home in an hour.
You had to decode that.
It was, I just never knew when my mom was right on her way. And so I empathize with this because you just never know where you are with these people. But I think this is, you know, just a workplace thing of like, I'll be back in a few minutes. And that just means when I can.
Right. Whereas to Becca, it means, no, do what you say, right? That's words are how we construct our space and our agreements and our things. And if I can't trust that, then I don't know how to interpret the world. So.
See, they should take Matt Damon's advice from 30 Rock when he's a pilot. And he goes, I always tell people when I don't know the delay, it'll be about a half an hour because it's long enough where they know they'll be waiting, right, but not so long while they start rioting.
Right. Oh, man, that was a very funny sequence.
Yeah. So I'm declaring Skylaw.
What was the owl, the legend of the guardians, the owls of Cahoot?
What was this?
That was the movie that they kept watching over and over again is Legend of the Guardians. It's one of these, you know, hero things, but it's all about owls.
Okay. So, yeah.
Very funny.
It's pretty funny. It was that or TGS. All right. So Ogilvy, you have.
Hold on a second with Becca. Yep. I want to just go back to Becca real quick. And with Mel, like we talked about it a little bit more, but that Mel gets sort of blindsided by the fact that I'm assuming that she's her legal guardian.
Or at least a medical proxy.
Yeah, but then she'd be able to know what the medical diagnosis was of the urinary tract infection. So I don't know how that relationship. So
she's definitely not a legal guardian because then I think that would come with medical proxy, right? Maybe it's just right. Like she's an emergency contact and.
Yeah, but then, you know, how does she manage her care and what? So clearly she is playing the big sister role.
I mean, you can split that, right? You can have a power of attorney without a medical proxy.
Okay.
She could have power of attorney where she can act as her fiduciary. She can, you know, make transactions based on her. She can manage her care, but not anything healthcare wise.
Right. Okay. So that makes sense because she interacts with the facility that Mel is at during the day. I'm not sure what that whole setup is. And she has obviously authority there in some legal capacity.
They could also just be playing a little bit fast and loose with this.
Older sister and all that kind of stuff. So she's clearly playing the older sister role. And so she is this primary caregiver, like making sure Becca's world is organized and she's, you know, getting the things that she needs to, you know, have her life. And then to get hit with the fact that not only do you have a boyfriend, but the boyfriend that you're having sex with, and great for Becca, like, hoorah, like, go, girl. But then, like, for poor Mel to get hit with that information.
Yeah.
Like, that's tough, right? That's that caregiver exhaustion stuff. Like, oh, man, I can't believe, like, what? Not only were you keeping this from me, like, but, yeah, I don't know. It's such a complex stew there.
And she's like, lots and lots and lots of it. Like, man, like, let's just come. And you know she's being literal. She's not exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Lots of sex.
All the time.
Like when? Like during the day? Like when did it happen?
She goes, right now. You know? You don't even know.
So anyway, great, great complex because, you know, Becca deserves a full life as a human being and all of the attendant absolutely. Things.
And I'm as not long begrudging as her that, but Mel also deserves some peace.
Exactly. Right. So, especially after the deposition day.
Yeah, exactly. She did not need this today. No. At least the deposition is over. And like the way that the, you know, the hospital lawyer just goes right back to business, like, ah, this won't affect your career. It's fine. And they just want to trump it up for the insurance.
Poor Mel. She's just like, she has no way to process that, right? The lawyer's just like, it's a shitty world. Get over it.
Right.
All right. So you had, what did you want to talk about? Something else?
Oh, I don't know. Ogilvy?
You
are bringing up, is he worthy of redemption? I think some people are not worthy of redemption, but Ogilvy, fine, you know, whatever. He hasn't done anything like evil.
No, he's driven. He's working hard. He knows a lot.
He could get better for sure.
Yeah. And when we compare him to Santos or Garcia or Dr. Park, right? Like, how are we judging our standards here?
Jamie Lannister walked so Ogilvy could run.
Fair enough.
They're the same character.
I did like how he was bouncing the leg like a baby. Like he was holding the baby at one point.
He's trying to keep it comfortable.
It was pretty funny. I think we talked about Mohan. Do we need to talk about her anymore?
I mean, you have here about the, you know, she wants a letter from Abbott.
Yes.
I mean, she clearly is not happy with Robbie, right? Like, she doesn't want to be like, hey, buddy, do you think I can have another letter now after this? Like, although, yeah. Was that before? I think that was actually before he blew up at her.
The question about was Abbott there? Yeah, that was before. So, and I think it goes to the fact that she just doesn't feel safe with Robbie, right?
She definitely doesn't feel like she vibes with him.
No.
So, are you still shipping her and Abbott, or do you think she just wants a letter?
I think the makings of a relationship are definitely there. Definitely.
You know,
I mean, the way she looked at him a couple episodes ago.
Two Mohans together, and then you have an age appropriate relationship.
Fair enough. I was thinking too about her panic attack and how, so she's getting stressed out about her mother. She's worried about her next assignment. That's got her unnerved and the chaos of the environment. But then leaving the climate controlled space of the emergency department and then going out into the swamp of heat and odor that's out there in the chairs where it's not a climate controlled space, like that physiological change, like I could just see how that was a big trigger.
And especially the horde of zombies trying to get information from her. I mean,
it was filmed brutal. So well.
And then you got Joy coming in all like,
help is on the way, dear.
Where did that come from?
I pulled Mrs. Doubtfire over here, you know?
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. All right.
Just Joy. Joy is such a joy. And she brings in the wheelchair and she's like, get in. Do not argue with me right now. Do not test me. Get in. I'm glad that Mohan finally listened.
Yeah. Yeah. When she dropped the F-bomb, she got her in. But imagine being all those people out there and seeing a doctor like falling over. I would have gone into, because we've watched too much post-apocalyptic dramas for our podcasting careers. I would have, if I see a doctor stumbling out like that, I'm gone. I'm like, okay, this is it. This is the plague. This is like, you know,
yeah, that's pretty apocalypse. Bad. That's pretty I'm bad. Gone. There's a hospital near my hometown that I had a coworker who used to say I could be hit by a car in the parking lot of that hospital and I'd ask to be taken to the other one.
Wow.
And it ended up being bought by another company and it's fine now, but it's like, man, there are some hospitals that get bad reps and it seems like the Pitt's kind of like that.
Well, yeah, and it's the one that you that is there, right, for a lot of people in downtown in central where are we?
Pittsburgh.
Philadelphia.
Pittsburgh.
I got lost for a minute there.
The Pitt,
of course. I don't have much else. I've got some medical things, but I'm maybe going to save those for talking to Sarah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I did like the Wizard of Oz, fly my pretties, from Donna. That was funny. And Emma did a really great job of tracking down the family. She did a full-on stalking off the IG of the dad and found the mom, all that stuff.
Emma's doing her best. She's, you know, where do I put these? All right, we're figuring it out. At least she's asking questions. That's something Javadi needs to learn how to do is ask questions. Don't just assume. I mean, her and Ogilvy, both these, you know, know-it-alls who have trouble asking for help. I think Javadi has been humbled. It's time for Ogilvy to finally accept the humbling that he's been getting doled out
too much every time single on the episode. TikToks. Too much time, man. Too much time on the thing.
What are you talking about? Javadi?
Yeah, I'm talking people's attention spans, you know, being absorbed by other stuff.
That's right.
So,
well, all right. We did it. We recapped this episode. Sorry, everybody, that it's a little bit late. It's my fault. I had to do research for our Costco episode.
Oh, I see. Sacrificing the pit for Cosmere. Oh, no, Costco. It was this Costco episode.
That's what I'm saying. I had to do research for the Costco episode.
Right. Second breakfast coming up.
Speaking of that is going to be our subject, Warehouse Wars, for Second Breakfast this month. Also this week, because we're recording it this week. We're going to talk all things bulk buying. So get your feedback in the Discord or via email, whatever you want to do. That's for subscribers only, as will be 11sies. And I believe we're covering Mean Girls for March of the Millennials.
Mean Girls crushed it. 17-10-8.
I did say I need you to watch this. And I think part of it is that people know that you haven't seen it and they want to get your initial reactions. And I just hope that it's not going to be overhyped for you, because it is very you will notice memes that have gotten into pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, this is like going back to some 80s movies and seeing the meme factory there. But there's a whole segment of stuff that I missed from this era, because I was just not interested in this. These films weren't in my quadrant, as
right,
they say.
Right. So you'll definitely pick up on some of that. For now, we have a lot of other stuff going on. You and Alicia are just finishing up the Oscars.
Well, I mean, Alicia's finishing up the Oscars.
Oh, I thought you were doing I
swan in at the beginning and I swan in at the end.
I know. I'm saying you are.
I'm saying this for the listeners. The
wrap up, right?
Yes, I'm helping her with doing the wrap up. We're going to recap. We're going to talk a little bit about the ceremony, and then we're going to talk about the 10 nominations for Best Picture and where our individual personal rankings are and how they relate to the what was picked.
So. Very cool. Excited for that wrap-up podcast. I never watch any movies, as everybody knows, and so I learn all my movie lore from Alicia and David when he pops in for the beginning and end.
Perfect. What else we got going on? I think I want to maybe talk to Nicole and Jean again about Paradise. We did kind of a season 2 check-in, and I don't know, maybe I'll grab them for a little what you're watching or something, and we can talk about that. And then I think we're going to do a season wrap-up once that's done.
Somebody on Spotify commented that they were bummed that we were doing weekly on that.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of like, oh, okay, if there's, you know, I mean, Jean and,
well,
and
you, Nicole. One person is waiting for the weekly coverage at least.
Well, you know, that's how we work. That's how we roll around here. You say one thing, like, your takes aren't very hot by definition. So we start calling
them. I'm going to keep calling takes. Them hot takes out of spite.
I want it heat lamp takes.
They're hot with spite.
Very good. Very good. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of love in our community for that show. So I'm that's not going to cool. put it past them. Cool. I can't think of what else we have going on. It's a little bit quiet.
It's a quiet season, but we did an Earthsea episode. I want everyone to go listen to that, yes, because that would make Marilyn very happy. And then I got to schedule.
We got one comment about that.
Yeah, I saw that. And then Marilyn and I are going to schedule our next Torrent episode soon. I got to send her a message. And so for the Silmarillion.
Well, we've got One Piece coming up. You guys are going to be doing a little coverage of that.
That's
right?
True too. We have to do our. I was talking to Alicia. We might do more than one episode. We got to see how we can schedule it out here, because it's getting love in our community. Are you going to get into it, David? Are you going to watch One Piece?
I might do a drive by on it. We'll see.
It's silly, but it's fun.
Okay,
it's fun.
And I think the Radioactive Rambling guys are going to be doing Invincible. Is that true?
Yes, they're doing Invincible and the Boys. Okay. I just want to point out one thing on Hope One Piece is that Alicia has dubbed it Hope Punk.
Yeah, of course it is.
Perfect. It's Hope Punk.
I love it.
But yes, Radioactive Ramblings is doing Invincible and the Boys coming up. Invincible comes first, the Boys second, and then of course
Project Hail Mary.
That's in the talks. It's coming out in a week, and Alicia and I are going to be doing coverage on that.
Perfect.
We're just gonna.
I think keep Nicole read the stuff book. On. I think Nicole. Well, that's how we roll.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Nicole was excited. And then Daredevil Born Again is coming up. And I know Jean and I believe Luke and Alicia are going to be doing some sporadic coverage of that.
That's right.
So.
And probably Howard, of course, back doing their newlywed show.
Yep.
I still don't fully understand it, but it seems to be going swimmingly.
It's Steve and Anthony talking about movies.
Like, that's right.
You can't go wrong.
Whatever the premise is, it'll be fun.
They dropped the last Starfighter episode today. I am saving it for when I can get out for a walk. We had some bad weather today, so I want to be able to have them on my walk as I go out.
Very nice. And never mind the music. Weekly, you already mentioned Nicole talking about Paradise, but Nicole's on with Mark, and they are talking about music and psychology every single week.
There was a great crossover episode with Mark and Alicia on the Oscars on the music.
Yes, I saw that on the feed.
Yeah. I'm trying to see. I mean, let me peek into their feed and see what they've got coming up. They got a mailbag coming up. That's their next one.
That's right. I saw you were desperate to get into the mailbag.
I don't know if he's going to accept it.
Couldn't make the cutoff.
And he's harsh like that, man.
Yeah. He's a professor.
Yeah.
You can't cross the professor. He sets a deadline. You don't go past midnight.
I didn't relate to, if I had related to it that way, I would have got it done on time. That's kind of funny. That's actually funny now that you frame it like that. Because that's totally, I was like begging and pleading with him on the Discord.
You're like, can I do extra credit?
I did a really good job on it. I think it's a funny thing because it relates to one of their prior episodes.
Oh, my mom's really going to kill me if I fail this class.
That's hilarious.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, you want to say thank you to everybody? I'll say Discord server boosters if you cheer the lore masters on.
So go for it.
Our Discord server boosters, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Doove71, Athena A, Listu, Nancy M, Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard, and Andrean.
And our lore masters are top tier subscribers, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, SC, Peter OH, Nancy M, Doove71, Brian8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Nathan T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Coley S, Ilmaril, Paul K, Rocky Zim, Jessica A, Red Zippy, the TCS, Dopamini, Ketchit, LNR, Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W, Cassie K, Chumba Rooney, Tilla, Katia, still don't know how to pronounce that right, Josh Liu, Paint and PDX, Corey G, Quinch, and forever last, but never least, Adrian. Thank you all so very much for your ongoing support. We literally couldn't do it without you.
So, thank you, everyone. And we will see you for another shift or another hour of the shift next week.
Bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.